This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hello, everybody. Bob Main here with another episode of today's survival show. Episode 173, to be exact. This is a practical show. I talk about doing what you can with what you have, wherever you are, in the famous words of Teddy Roosevelt. This is a practical show because I don't go tinfoil hat on you. I try to keep this rooted in common sense. If you're looking for a podcast about zombies and far out theories on how the world is going to come to an end and so on and so forth, then this is probably not your show. I'm just an everyday guy, folks, and I use this microphone and this platform to talk about my journey in the survival and preparedness realm. What I mean by that is I believe that personal responsibility is more important today than it ever has been. And we do have some very serious problems going on in the world. If you're listening to me from another country, I am based in the United States. I'm in San Antonio, Texas. I'm a Yankee. I'm originally from the northern part of the United States. But when I say we're having problems, I talk about the problems that we're having here in the U.S. I'm sure that in other countries, the challenge is just as great. So I'm glad that you're tuning in, and thank you very much for listening to my show. As I'm dictating this, I'm cruising down the freeway as usual. I typically do these podcasts between business appointments. I'm an over-the-road traveler. I do a lot of sales work. I'm in the security business. I sell security products for hotels. And I just try to keep my family prepared for common sense events. So I'm going to talk about finding and storing knowledge. Knowledge is power. At least that's what, you know, people say. That's what you hear. That knowledge is power. Most people that have a great deal of knowledge usually also have a very good level of confidence as well. And if you think about, if a disaster hits, you're going to need confidence. I don't care what happens. And you know, folks, a disaster hits somebody every single day. And it could be a small disaster, it could be a large disaster. The smaller disasters seem to be more common. You know, things like losing a job, a family member getting real sick, somebody needing some first aid, drought, which wipes out your garden like we've had here over the last year in Texas. These are the types of things that may not affect an entire community, although I guess the drought did. The drought affected the entire state of Texas this past year. And by the way, the predictions are we're supposed to have more of the same in 2012. But a lot of these disasters just affect somebody's individual circumstances, or they affect that person's family. Are you prepared for these types of things? That's what I want to talk about. So a gentleman that is a member of our forum and also a listener to this show, he goes by Thoxbuddy on the forum, and he's from the great state of Wisconsin. And that's where I did most of my growing up, was in the state of Wisconsin. He sent this to me. So the first part of this podcast is on finding and storing knowledge. How do you acquire survival skills and knowledge? And then what do you do with it? After you've got the knowledge, after you have the information, typically it comes to you over the internet, then what do you do with it so that you can use it later if some kind of a disaster hits you? And then after that, I've got a little bit of a knife review for you. I've been carrying a knife lately, the last few months, and I've been meaning to do a review on it. It's a great survival knife. It's just a great practical use knife. And I'll kind of spend the last small part of this podcast talking about that. So I'm kind of mixing together two topics on this podcast. So let's dive right into it here. Let's talk about finding and storing knowledge. I'm going to use the outline that ThoughtSpuddy sent me. And again, he deserves the credit. Go to the forum. You see a lot of posts by him. By the way, since I'm talking about the forum, let me just do a couple of announcements here before I get into the main topic. Please become a member of our forum. We've got a small group, but a good group, and we try to keep things rooted in common sense on the forum, just like I do on this podcast. But it's a friendly bunch of people, and if you join the forum, please do me a favor and send me an email. My email is bob@todayssurvival.com. bob@todayssurvival.com. Send me an email and say, hey, Bob, I just signed up for your forum, and give me the username that you picked. That way I can help keep the spammers out of the forum. That way I know that you're a real person and not some spammer trying to get in, okay? If you go to todayssurvival.com, there's a button up at the top of the website that says forum. It'll get you to where you need to go, and I'd appreciate it if you'd sign up. Also, if you don't mind, if you could consider helping to support my show by investing in my Survival Champions Club podcast. That's an exclusive podcast for people that financially support my show. For only $15, you can get a couple of hours of interviews. It's not just me talking. There are other people that are on there interviewing about all kinds of preparedness topics. You get a great value. It's a couple of hours long. You get an excellent value, and it's material I've never covered on this show before. If you go to todayssurvival.com, you'll see a buy now button there. I will send you an email link as to how to get your copy of the Survival Champions Club podcast. I got a new version coming out pretty soon, in about 6 weeks or so, but right now there's a deal for both versions 1 and 2, and it's listed on the website. That would help support my show. I don't have sponsors on this show, and I do that for a reason. I've turned away sponsors because I want the ability and the freedom to say and do whatever I'd like to say without some sponsor getting mad at me or saying, hey, you know what, we're paying money to be on your show, Bob, and please don't say that. I want to reserve the freedom to speak my mind about whatever the topic happens to be on each episode. So this is a listener-supported show. Your support would be greatly appreciated. All right, now that I've got that out of the way, let's get into Finding and Storing Knowledge by ThoughtSpuddy. I really appreciate this information that he sent to me. A large part of survival and preparedness discussions are centered around acquiring and storing food and ammo and water and skills and so on, and they should be. But he says he doesn't hear very often how to acquire and store the most valuable survival and preparedness asset that there is. And that's called knowledge. And I've always said that I think your knowledge, what you have upstairs, what you have in your brain, is just as important as what you might have stored in your garage or in your basement or in your shed or wherever it is that you're storing your supplies. You know, the best thing about knowledge is that you carry it with you all the time. It doesn't weigh anything. It's something that's very difficult for anybody to take away from you. So, how do you acquire knowledge? He says when he wants to acquire survival and preparedness know-how, he wants to get it now, quickly. He wants to get it cheap. And he wants to store it and organize it in such a way that it can be easily accessed and utilized by myself or anyone else. Now, this is a great point that he makes in this email that he sent me. How many of you listening to this have kids or other family members that you want to teach the subject of survival to? You know, in the last episode when I talked about talking to kids about survival, you know, there might also be some other adults. And one of the best things that you can do is take information like this podcast or blog posts or documents or YouTube videos and put them together like on a CD or on a flash drive and give that to somebody. It's also a great resource for you, and it keeps things organized. So it can be a good gift, and it can also be a good resource for you to keep things organized and readily accessible. You're listening to this podcast probably because you got it off of the internet. Now, it's possible that somebody downloaded it and did what I just said. It's possible somebody burned it to a CD or they put it on a flash drive and they gave it to you. And then maybe you imported it into your iPod or Droid device and voila, now you're listening to me, right? You know, I get people that email me and say, Bob, I listen to you while I'm at work. If I'm talking to you right now while you're at work helping you pass the time, I feel honored. I get people that say that they listen to me when they're working out. And, you know, that's how I listen to podcasts also. I listen to a lot of them when I'm driving. Right now I'm driving and doing this podcast, but when I finish up doing this, I'm going to listen to about three other podcasts because, according to my GPS, I've got about 2 hours and 40 minutes left of my trip. So that'll give me a lot of time to start listening to some of the other knowledge-based products that I've been able to access. So the internet provides pretty much the most readily available and affordable way of gaining knowledge. Now, let's talk about podcasts for a minute. I'm glad you found my podcast. Probably there's a good chance that you found it by searching iTunes. And let's talk a little bit about iTunes. With iTunes open to the podcast screen, on the bottom right, you choose the podcast directory option by clicking on the little arrow. And when the iTunes screen loads in the upper right-hand corner, it'll give you a directory of podcasts. You can try that, but you find that what you're looking for a lot more efficiently if you just use the search bar. So if you look at iTunes, and whether you're accessing iTunes from an iPhone or an iPod, or whether you're using iTunes on your computer, there is a search bar. If you put in survival or preparedness or readiness, stuff like that, it'll bring you to a list of all the podcasts. And I bet you that's probably how you found this one. Now, Fox Buddy goes on to say in this email, he says, type in a topic and the next screen will have podcasts as well as other media. But what you want is only podcasts. So if you're all you want to do is listen to podcasts, you make that choice, podcast. Once you find a particular show that's of interest to you, like let's say you're looking for survival and preparedness, and let's say you come across this show. It says Today's Survival Show or Today's Survival Podcast. Or maybe you come across Jack Spirko's The Survival Podcast. Or maybe you come across some of the others like Chipmunk's Family Survival Podcast and things like that. Well, by the way, those are great shows. Listen to those. I listen to those regularly. All you have to do is click the subscribe for free button and you can subscribe them and it automatically puts it into your podcast directory. And by the way, since I'm talking about searching on iTunes, if you guys don't mind, if you'd give me a rating on iTunes, I'd appreciate that. Good, bad, or indifferent, I don't care. That's fine. I'm an open-minded guy. I can take criticism. I also like the compliments if you have some good things to say about this show. This helps other people. One of the things that you can do to help other people is if you like something, share it. But also writing a review helps because iTunes posts those reviews for people to see. And I don't know about you, but I like recommendations. When somebody recommends something to me, it carries more weight. And when I see a lot of reviews on a particular show, I pay attention to that. I'm curious. I want to see what it is that other people are listening to and gathering information. So if you haven't left me an iTunes review on this show already, that would be much appreciated if you could do that. By the way, there are a lot of other podcasts out there that haven't submitted themselves to iTunes. And you can just do Google searches on that. But you can find scores of preparedness and survival websites with batches of information just about on any topic that you want. Now, Fox Buddy says, and this is something I didn't know. I learned something here when I read this part of the email. Let me share it with you. He says, if I come across a web page that has useful information that I want, and I want to save it, I just right-click, and it'll save the page in PNG format, which I can view with a picture viewer program that usually comes with OS. You must be using an Apple computer. On many website forums, you'll find links to PDFs, which is a format, if you're not real familiar with the internet, it's a free program called Adobe Acrobat Reader, and that can be downloaded to your computer and saved as a document. And you know what? That kind of gives me an idea. I think what I might start doing is producing some PDF documents, maybe some summaries of each of my shows, and probably posting those on the forum. On Today's Survival Show forum so that you guys can download them and save them for yourself. I didn't know that by simply right-clicking the mouse, I could save it that easily. What I typically do is just bookmark the page or bookmark the website and refer back to it later. Another thing you can do to acquire knowledge is you can also do an internet search for PDF files for the topic that you want by following in the search bar with the file type PDF. Okay, so you can put in the topic you want, and then you can put .pdf, and it will pull up PDF files that you can save to your computer on that topic. And once you find a file that you want, you save it to a folder in your document directory on your computer. And since I'm talking about PDF documents, Ready.gov and FEMA.gov have reams of downloadable PDF files on disaster preparedness, recovery and survival and first aid, emergency preparedness, and so forth. Tons and tons. I would suggest, and this is what I do. Let me give you a little example here of what I've been doing lately to organize myself. I'm a big fan of three-ring binders. I know that's kind of old-fashioned, you know, but think about this. If you have a power outage for an extended period of time, it's great to save this stuff electronically, but you can't access it electronically unless you've got power to run your electronic devices. So unless you've got either really big batteries on your computers or your electronic devices, you're going to be kind of screwed if the power's out for a long time, unless you have a decent generator, which, of course, many good preppers have good generators. But then again, your generator is only as good as long as you've got fuel to feed it. So one of the reasons I'm a big fan of three-ring binders, I know it's old-fashioned, I know they're big, they take up a lot of space, I can access them just about any time. And even if I don't have any power, I'm still going to have access to some type of a flashlight or some type of a lantern so that I have enough light to read what's in my three-ring binder. So if you go to websites and you find something, I would suggest printing it and making a nice organized three-ring binder. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the episode I did several weeks ago where I interviewed Dan Vamos from the Homestead Dividends podcast, you know, he puts receipts into a three-ring binder. And I never thought of that. I just recently started doing that since I listened to him. He puts receipts for all kinds of important stuff that he buys and organizes them into a three-ring binder. And he gave us an example on that show. Go back and listen to it. If you go back and look at some of the older shows of today's survival podcast, if you go back, I would say about 5 or 6 episodes from this one, you'll find that where Dan talks about the importance of the receipts. Okay, sorry about that, folks. As you heard there, I had to pause to take a business phone call. But anyway, he talks about the importance of those receipts and how it saved him money. So go back and listen to that episode, and I think you'll find that to be quite valuable and a good idea on how to use a three-ring binder. Let me see. I think that was about six. I think that was episode 169, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so back to Thox Buddy's email. So he talks about going to Ready.gov and FEMA.gov, and he says they have almost everything you need for a lot of topics, you know, such as survival and first aid and emergency preparedness. Now, he mentions another website that I didn't know. This is one of the reasons why I love submissions like this from listeners. There's such a vast amount of knowledge out there. Another website called archive.org. That's archive.org, and I'll put some links to all of these in the show notes. By the way, I've been posting most of the links to the forum. I usually start a thread about each episode on the forum. You do not have to be a member of our forum. If you're not a member yet and you go to the section of our forum where it says comments about the podcasts, right there you'll see a thread on almost every show that I do, and that's a good discussion forum there, and you'll find the links to everything. I'll put archive.org as a link. It's a library of scanned literature and other media, and he says it's from there that he downloads in PDF format as well as Kindle and mobile formats, old books on camping and woodcraft, cookbooks, barn building, canning and pickling and stuff like that. I didn't know that. I didn't know about archive.org. So hopefully I'll start using that pretty soon. Hopefully you will too. Another source, another place to find and store survival knowledge is State and county extension services and a lot of universities also have websites with a lot of documents on canning and agriculture, gardening, self-sufficiency, herbs, tree identification, and so forth. So if you want to find an image of something, maybe you want to find a picture of something, just use the search engine like Bing or Google and then use the image search icon, and he can find an image. And if he wants to save it, he just clicks on Save As and saves it to his document folder. Now, I do this, and one of the things that I like to do is when I put it in my document folder, I like to save the image, name the image, usually with a subject. So, for example, recently I was doing some internet searches on the subject of how to fix my car. One of the things that I was trying to do was learn how to make some minor repairs to my vehicle. Well, the bad news is it didn't work out. I'm just not very mechanically inclined when it comes to vehicles. But I did find some pictures, I did find some images, and some good articles that related to what I was trying to do. I had a problem with the throttle body on my Honda. It was all carboned up, and I could tell by lack of power and sluggish acceleration, and I was going to try to clean that thing out myself. Well, it just was a little bit, you know, too complicated, at least for me, again, because I'm not mechanically inclined. But by doing that internet search and finding some pictures and saving it, I was able to have a better understanding of what needed to be done to my vehicle. The way that helped me, and this is why it's a survival topic, I was actually able to save some money because by getting on the internet, researching the type of problem that I was having with my automobile, finding out that the throttle body might be part of it and might need to be cleaned out, it might need to get some of the buildup and the carbon and the junk out of it. By figuring that out, I was able to talk in a more educated manner with my mechanic. I think it saved me money. I think it helped the mechanic pinpoint what the problem was with my vehicle. So where I was going with this is you can search images, you can find images on the internet as to what it is that you're trying to accomplish. When you save those images to your computer, give them a name. And I've got a folder called Auto Repairs. When the timing belt on my Honda needed to be replaced about 3,000 miles ago. With the Honda, you have to replace the timing belt and you got to do the water pump and everything. I was able to save some money by being able to source the parts myself. And there's a shop here in San Antonio that I took it to that lets you bring the parts yourself. You can bring the parts to the mechanic and then pay the mechanic the labor to install them. I saved some money and not having to pay the markup on the parts. So by doing those internet searches, seeing a picture, saving a picture of what it is that I'm actually looking for and finding articles and finding resources on the internet, it helps, folks. It saved me money. Plus, you know, I've learned something about auto repairs. So I think that's helpful. I didn't take shop class in high school. I should have, but I didn't. Shame on me. You know, every good prepper needs to know about vehicles, in my opinion. If you don't know much about vehicles, if you're like me and you don't know much about fixing and maintaining vehicles, study up on that. Set a goal to acquire that as some of your knowledge and use some of the methods that I'm talking about on this podcast to store some of that information so you can refer back to it later. All right, moving on with Thox Buddy's article. Another great piece of information that he writes here. Lots of good stuff. Thank you for submitting this. By the way, if some of you have submissions that you'd like to make, if it's in audio format or if it's in written format, send it on over. I like to have this podcast be a listener-supported show. In the last episode, you know, you heard one of our members on the forum. He goes by a gray man, and he was talking about backup heat for your home, and he did a guest podcast for me, and that was awesome. It was great. In fact, I'm getting great feedback on that show. A lot of you out there have a lot of expertise. Again, I want this to be a community-based podcast. I am no expert. I don't profess to be an expert. Like I said, I'm just an ordinary guy sharing with you my journey towards trying to become more prepared. More prepared before disasters hit and after disasters hit. So, Thox Buddy goes on and says, the real gold mine for survival and preparedness topics is in the video realm, primarily YouTube. And boy, he's right about that. Wingman on our forum has been putting a lot of excellent videos on our forum lately about all sorts of topics. So a lot of good information. You go to YouTube, and search Bug Out Bag, for example. You'll probably find 500 videos on Bug Out Bags. Now, I do want to put a warning out there. Be careful. It's so easy for any joker to get on the internet and start putting out information that might not always be the best stuff. And you might be thinking, yeah, Bob, sometimes you make mistakes on your show. Yes, I do. So it's very important that when somebody puts something out on the internet that you check it out. And if there are some inconsistencies, send them some feedback about some of the inconsistencies. And again, it's a judgment call. And sometimes it's opinions. Sometimes somebody will put out a video or a podcast, say, hey, you know what? I think this would be a good method. Well, you might not agree with it. It might not work for you, but it may work for them. All in all, I have a saying that says, take the best and leave the rest. And that's what I want you to do with this podcast. Take the best and leave the rest. Take the best of what I offer. If it works for you, use it, save it, and run with it, and leave the rest. If there's something I talk about that doesn't work for you, or maybe it's not exactly in line with what you want to do or what you believe, then discard it. I don't have a problem with that. All I ask is that you send some good, constructive feedback to me. And I think anybody who produces videos and podcasts and try to put some knowledge out there is in the same boat. They want to know what it is or how they're doing and what it is that you, the listener, or you, the viewer, want to know. I'll give you an example. I take a lot of firearms training. And I watch some firearms trainers on video from time to time. And there are some people teaching some real garbage about firearms training on the internet. And there's also some that are teaching excellent stuff. Now, you might be asking, well, how do I discern that? You know, well, you can kind of get a gut feeling, I think. I think you can get a gut feeling by the person, or from the person who's presenting it, who's presenting the video, who's doing the podcast, whatever. And you can find out, you can figure out what their level of sincerity is and what their level of experience with the topic is. That's the key. What's their level of experience? When I watch a YouTube video, I can tell in about a minute whether that person really has a lot of experience with what they're with the subject matter that they're talking about, or is this just a person that is, you know, venting or just putting up a YouTube video for the sake of a video so that their friends can watch it and so they can impress their friends? You can tell. You can tell. And a lot of what's been posted on our forum, the links to the videos and stuff, that's knowledgeable stuff. These, you know, Wingman knows what he's doing when he puts out videos. You know, I mean, it's good stuff. So yes, YouTube is a very good resource. Just be careful with it. One thing about YouTube is you can create a playlist, kind of like you do with your iPod, with your music. You can create a playlist of videos that you want to view and then just sit back and watch them. Or you can download them. This is something else I didn't know. You can download the videos with a program like Real Player Downloader or YouTube Downloader or True Grip, and then save them to your computer or put them on a media device or burn them to a DVD for your own private use later. I didn't know that. Learn some. I know that you can save the audio version of YouTube videos. I do that from time to time. I save the audio version of it so that I can listen to it later, but then you lose the effect of not being able to see the video. So again, I just learned something here by presenting this to you and reading Fox Buddy's email on how to save videos. Another thing is if you've got some kind of a tablet, be it an iPod or if it's a Zoom tablet or if it's any kind of an Android-based tablet or even a computer, you can stream Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that. You can stream videos right to it. That gives you even a wider range of videos that you can watch. You can watch movies and documentaries and TV shows about whatever subject it is that you want to learn more about. So that's another way to find and store knowledge. Since the first part of this podcast is about finding and storing knowledge, that's another way you can do it. Okay, next, my son does this next one quite a bit. Your local or your regional library is also quite likely available on the internet. And you can download Kindle books from your library, and they're loaned to you just like if you were loaning or borrowing a hard copy book from the library. You can also search the catalog and put in requests for books and audio and video media and so forth. Now, the last part of Fox's email here is, I think, the best. Because, you know, he talks about how to find all this knowledge and all these resources. But how do you store them and organize them and put them all together? How do you organize all the text and the video and the audio files? He says, once I have them, he organizes them according to media type and subject, and then he keeps them on his computer, and he makes a copy on USB memory stick, and he keeps it in a safe place. I use folders. It works very, very well for me. I create a new folder, and I just dump things into folders. And then it makes it real easy when I move it over to a USB or a DVD or an external hard drive. I just move the entire folder over, and I can look at it. And then again, some of those that I want to print in hard copy, I put them in my binder, and I just use simple tabs and put them in my binder organized according to subject matter. Now, I have a fireproof safe in my house. So I've got a lot of hard drives and flash drives and CDs and DVDs in my fireproof safe. That's where I like to keep a lot of my survival preparedness and also other private documents, personal financial documents, and things like that. I also have a safe deposit box, and I've got a duplicate copy of all that in my safe deposit box. So it's stored in two places. It's stored in a fireproof safe in my home, and it's stored off-site. I highly recommend off-site storage. Now, I'm a little bit nervous about off-site internet storage, like Mozy or iCloud, places like that. Because I don't know who has access to my information and where that's being stored. I like to store it in what I call computer hard copy. Computer hard copy means it's actually saved to a device, like a USB drive or a DVD or a CD or an external hard drive. And then I like to put that device off-site in a safe deposit box. I understand there's limitations to that. I understand if there's some kind of a disaster, your bank's wiped out, it might be hard for you to get to your off-site safe deposit box. That's why I duplicate that in my fireproof safe. It's all about duplication. I really believe in that. I really believe in a couple of different backups stored in a couple of different places. And if you create a survival binder like I'm talking about, you might want to create two or three of them and store them strategically, maybe one off-site and a couple on-site where they're going to be safe. Now, Fox writes in this email that he likes to store all this into one easy place on his computer, and that's good. One of the great things about storing a lot of the information that you gather into one place where it's concise and it's consolidated, it's easier to share. I mean, it's pretty easy to put it all into a folder or a couple of folders and then send those folders over to a flash drive and hand it to somebody and say, here, plug this into your computer, look at it, and start learning some stuff. Now, finally, I want to talk about going to seminars. And this is not something that Thoughts Buddy put in his email. I'm pretty much kind of finished up with that. But I want to talk to you about some personal experiences I've had. I learn best by doing, and I learn best by watching. Everybody, to some extent, has their own preferred method of learning. I'm not a big reader. I even have a hard time reading a lengthy blog post or a lengthy post on an internet forum or a lengthy article. I like to listen, and I like to do. And going to live seminars is important. Now, it costs you your time, and some seminars have a fee. Sorry about that. Phone's ringing off the hook today, but that's good for business. Anyway, so going to live seminars, there's typically a fee associated with them. But I think it's so well worth your time. Being able to take what you read on the internet and what you learn from your library and so forth, and then going out and applying it. Nothing seems to beat the application of what you learn. And in training classes, that's where you get that application. It does require a commitment of time. I budget a certain amount of time every year for training. I just build that into my time budget. You know, folks, the way I operate, I kind of operate as if I have a budget for everything. I have a budget for my finances. I have a budget for my time. I even break my business time and personal time into different segments, and I budget them accordingly. I'm a firm believer in family time. And so I actually have to schedule family time into my calendar. I use my iPhone and my calendar on my computer extensively. And sometimes I have to schedule it in. I have to put family time in there. And I have to put training time in there. And then I have to schedule a reminder to myself to do that family time and do that training time. If this works for you, I would recommend that you do that. Because otherwise your time's going to get away from you, and time management is so important. But I'm a huge believer in training seminars. Matt Brasek with Midwest Disaster Medical, who's been on this show a couple of different times. If you're up in the western Wisconsin area and you want to learn more about first aid, check out his school, MidwestDisasterMedical.com. I think it's a great resource. I wish I could be up there to take some of his first aid courses. If you have a chance to do that, you know, that would be a good example of acquiring knowledge. Whenever you can get to a training seminar, even if it's just a couple of hours. As a matter of fact, I kind of like the short training seminars. I like them better than the long 2-day or 3-day. I like a half a day or a 6-hour training program or whatever. My attention span's kind of short. I don't know about yours. But I can absorb a lot of information in a small period of time, and I'd rather do it little by little than to sit there for 2 or 3 days. That's just kind of the way my mind works. But budget some training time and seminar time and go to places. And besides that, it gets you out. It gets you, you know, out there interacting with other preppers. I really believe that we're a big product of our environment. And if you engage in the environment of being around preppers and being around survivalists and going to some of these seminars to learn. Like, for example, I'm going to a knife-making seminar soon. With Matt Chusnick and Bladesmith from the Forum. It's coming up this weekend here in San Antonio. Going to a knife making seminar. And now I don't know Jack about making knives, but it's going to be really interesting, which is going to lead me into my knife review coming up here pretty soon. I want to see how they make knives. I know I'll learn something, even if I only go for half a day. In fact, that's probably all I'm going to have time to do. That's another way to acquire knowledge, is to go to shows and go to seminars. I guess this is a knife-making show that I'm going to. I want to learn. I'm a sponge for knowledge. And I would urge you to be too. I think that preppers should be a sponge for knowledge. All right, so that wraps it up. Thox Buddy, thanks for sending me this email. That wraps up this segment on finding and storing knowledge. And I appreciate you tuning in. Let's just take a quick break. And I'll be right back with a knife review. Stay tuned. Okay, back with you for segment number 2. All right, let's talk about a knife. A few months ago, I bought a Benchmade Griptilian. Now, up until this point, I was a very big fan of SOG knives, SOG knives. And I had a SOG of SOG Vulcan. And unfortunately, my Vulcan got donated to TSA at an airport. quite disappointing. I did not have time to mail it back to myself. I just had a brain fart, and I simply just forgot that it was in my pocket when I was going through TSA, taking a trip. So they got my nice, beautiful SOG Vulcan, and I missed that knife. So I saved up some money, because I pay cash for as much as I can possibly pay cash for, because I don't believe in going into debt. And I saved enough money until I could buy a Benchmade Griptilian, the Mel Pardue version. Now, I believe in quality knives. I believe in quality, everyday carry pocket knives. I think the everyday carry pocket folding knife is just, it's one of the greatest survival tools. It's so simple. It's so simple to always have one of these. Make sure that you abide by the law. Make sure you understand what's legal in your area. Search the knife laws. I happen to know that what I'm carrying is legal in the state of Texas. And I'm going to tell you why I chose this knife. First of all, I like a knife that is really easy to open quickly. I used to carry a lot of assisted opening knives. And I've kind of gotten away from that because I like knives that, well, first of all, one of the things about an assisted opening knife is that they're not legal in all areas. And I like to be able to carry my knife anywhere, as long as the blade length is within legal length. Yes, there are some states in the United States that have a blade length law. We have a blade length law here in Texas. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. I'm licensed to carry a loaded gun, but I'm not licensed to carry a large knife that exceeds the blade length law. That's just stupid. I mean, that, you know, that's politicians for you creating stupid laws. However, let's talk about the Benchmade Griptilian. It's legal here. It's really easy to open without the use of assisted opening. One of the things I like about this knife is the axis lock. I'm pretty sure that's a patented design. There are other knife makers that have versions of it, but it's not exactly like the axis lock. You pull back on the button that's on the handle, and it's ambidextrous. They do a good job of making this knife for lefties or righties. I'll get to that in a little bit. You just pull back on the handle and just give it a little flick, and the blade opens quickly. It's real quick. As a matter of fact, if you go on my YouTube channel, you'll see I did a review of the SOG Vulcan when I had it. I'm going to do a YouTube on this Benchmade Griptilian. But it's so easy to open. You can use the thumb stud, or you can pull back on the lock release button and just flick it. And it's just as fast as an assisted opening knife, in my opinion. So, the speed here of deploying this knife, I think, is pretty much the same, especially with practice. Again, everything takes practice. Practice, practice, practice. Hundreds and hundreds of repetitions. And sort of like dry fire practicing with a gun, I practice opening and closing my knife. It's real conducive to one-handed opening and one-handed closing. Real easy. That's one thing I like. The belt clip. The belt clip is reversible. So you can put it on the right-hand side of the knife or the left-hand side of the knife, depending on whether you're a righty or a lefty. That is very nice. Out of the box, it carries tip up. I like tip up carry. I don't like tip down carry. To me, tip up carry is faster. When I pull it out of the pocket, all I have to do is pull back on the lock latch, or just flick, put my thumb on the thumb stud and flick it open, and it's ready to go. Other knives that I've had where it carries tip down, I had to pull it out of my pocket and then kind of give it a half of a turn in my hand before I opened it up. I don't like to do that. I like to just be able to pull it out and flick it open. By the way, the thumb stud on this blade, Benchmade designed this perfectly. It's real easy to reach with your thumb, but it doesn't snag on your clothing when you're drawing the knife. Great thinking, great design by Benchmade. Way to go. The thing I like the best about this knife is the blade. Now, I have the Mel Pardue version of the Griptilian. If I'm not mistaken, there's different versions of the Benchmade Griptilian. Mine's the Mel Pardue. It says D2, D2 steel on the blade. Now, I have a blade that's not stainless. It's got that black coating on it. And I was a little bit nervous about that because I had a knife once before with the black coating and it got all scratched up and it looked like crap. Let me tell you what. Whatever this is that Benchmade has on this knife is incredibly durable. And this blade holds an edge. Wow. I've had this now for 3 months. And I've been using it a lot. In the past 3 months, it does not need to be sharpened. I've been cutting boxes. I've been cutting rope. I've been doing a lot of things with this knife recently. The things you just do with an everyday pocket knife. Cutting open bags. Cutting open plastic bags. Things like that. And it is really holding an edge. It holds an edge a lot better than any other knife I've ever owned. Even better than some of the Kershaw knives that I've owned. Now, I understand that the D2 steel is a little bit more difficult to sharpen. I'll get my buddy Matt Chusnick from the forum and a listener to the show. I'll get him to sharpen this when it's time. I could sharpen it myself, but man, somebody that's got a lot of experience at sharpening like him, I've seen his work. He's done knives for me before. He's just great. He's really good. I'd rather take it to the expert, somebody that really knows what they're doing, that's sharpened thousands of knives, and I probably won't have to do it very often because of the quality of the steel on this knife. I think my blade's like 3.5 or 3.25 inches long. Now, let's talk about the grip. This grip, this plastic grip here, is so incredibly well made, and they call it the Griptilian, and I can understand why. The grip, it's so easy to get what I call a good purchase on this knife, a good grip on this knife. It doesn't slip, and that's what I look for in any kind of a knife, whether you're going to be using it for survival or everyday, an everyday folder or whatever. To be able to get a good grip on it, and it's a strong grip, and I really like that. It's slightly reinforced with a little bit of steel, but they've just done a good job. And one of the things that's nice is it's not heavy. This knife is lightweight enough, all day carry, I don't even know it's there. And I can get my entire hand on the grip, all of my fingers. That's another thing I like. I don't like a knife so small that I can't get all my entire hand on it. There's not that much difference in the ability to conceal a small knife versus what I call a medium-sized pocket knife like this one. Over Christmas, I was with my family, and my brother says, "Hey, does anybody here have a knife I can use?" Because he was trying to cut something open. Now, the first thing I thought is, "Brother, you need to be carrying your own knife, pal." But some people don't realize the importance of it. You know, I try the best I can to impart preparedness principles to my family, but they don't always listen. So, like a good brother that I am, I lent him my knife, and I pulled out my Benchmade Griptilian, and I handed it to him, and I watched him open it up, and I watched him cut what he was cutting, and he hands it back to me, and he says, "Wow, that thing is sharp." And I said, "Yeah, would you believe I've had this thing a few months, and I've never sharpened it?" And he was quite amazed. So that's the other thing, too. Keep your knives sharp. A sharp knife is actually safer than a dull knife. Did you know that? A sharp knife is safer than a dull knife. And plus, hey, it's a lot more useful. Now, this knife built into the grip also has a nice hole built into the grip so you can put a lanyard on it. You know, you can put, if you want to carry this knife, like, using a lanyard or something like that, it's real easy to put that on there. It's very well designed, very well set up for that. And I'm very impressed with the smoothness of the opening. And also, when this knife is closed, one of the things that you want with a good pocket knife is you want the damn thing to stay closed when it's closed. I've had knives that have opened up on me by accident. This one does not do that. And boy, I tell you what, that really sucks when your knife opens up on you by accident. Trust me. This one stays closed very well. So Benchmade's done a good job with it. Now, what are some of the negatives? You know what the only negative I can think of is about this knife? The only negative is the price. Now, I paid $119.95, which probably is about in the medium price range. I've seen this knife sell for more, and I've seen it occasionally sell for less, but I paid $119.95 at Cabela's. Worth every single penny. I just have to be real careful not to donate this one to TSA like I did with my SOG knife. So I'll put a picture of it on the forum. I'll put a link to it. You can check out the Benchmade Griptilian by Mel Pardue. I believe in quality. I believe if I'm going to depend on this knife, either in a survival situation or if I'm just as an everyday carry, if I'm going to depend on it, I want it to last. I want it to be built well. And I'm not saying you have to go out and spend $120 on a knife to get a decent one, because there's a lot of good knives out there that are less than $120. But I'll tell you what, Benchmade has really put some great thought into this knife. Plus, one of the best things about this knife, it's American made. Okay, there you go. That's kind of a brief review there. Just kind of my everyday guy opinion about the Benchmade Griptilian Mel Pardue version. If you can get one, by all means, I highly recommend them. So that wraps up this episode, episode 173 of today's Survival Show on acquiring knowledge and a great email by Thox Buddy and also the Benchmade Griptilian knife. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Bob Main. It's my goal to help you do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in. I'll catch you next week, folks. Goodbye.